Yeah, how's it going? Okay, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. We want to give a special thank you to the Selters and to Beth and to Joel, really for everything. To start going through piece by piece, prat by prat, for what they do for me personally, communally, for the shul, in so many ways. That itself will be sort of its own lecture. But thank you so much for this evening. For those of you who, I don't understand why this would be, who did not want to sit in the front row. I don't understand. You know, to me, when I was a kid, I was always in the front row with my notebook out. But there are...
are you watching? Watch that. No. So there are source sheets up here, which we're going to use a little bit. So... Joel, don't put your food down. We'll come to you.
No.
And there's... Here, Shavir, put these back. I just want to thank people for, just in general, for coming out. I know that it's only 8 o'clock, but 8 o'clock on a Motzei Shabbos feels more like 10 o'clock at night. And it's very much appreciated, just us, at least for me, the fact that we have a community where people really are interested in growing and in learning. There are huge scholars that are out there that can speak about a lot of these topics, certainly more so than me, but the price was right, so I'm here, but which is always important, and for all donations to KBY, you can speak to Yudi afterwards, and Michael afterwards. But as far as I'm concerned, there's so many fascinating topics that are out there that a person I'm fascinated by, I enjoy learning about, I love teaching, I love even more than teaching, just us sort of coming together. So people would like to do these things in the future beyond these sort of two-part series. There's so many topics. So it's something that I look forward to doing. If a person goes on to, for instance, YU Torah, which is the, I'm sure whatever knows YU Torah is, it's the website of Shiurim by YU. I think last year they posted, if I'm not mistaken, their 1,000,000th shiur, which is pretty impressive. Not all of those are mine, just in case anybody is wondering. Maybe 85 shiurim, but there are people of tens of thousands of shiurim online. And so by now, probably it's 1,400,000 shiurim in YU Torah, which again is impressive and a source of pride to myself and others who are affiliated with YU. And you ask the question, how many of those shiurim deal with issues of halacha, of Jewish law, of Gemara, of Lamdus, of analysis of Jewish history? You'd probably say most of them. How many shiurim deal with issues of Jewish thought and Jewish philosophy and emunah and belief? It'd probably be a very, very, very small percentage of that, maybe a couple thousand out of, a million point four shiurim. And you ask, let's say for most of us here, almost all of us here have kids either who are in high school or who went to high school, how many of their hours were spent learning, this is not to at all minimize, but, Gemara, Halacha, et cetera, and how much time was spent about Jewish identity, Jewish philosophy, Jewish belief, et cetera? And the question is, not really that I can deal with this question now, but why is that? Why is it that Jewish belief and Jewish thought is something that is sort of so understudied or not thought about? And if you even ask somebody the question, which really is the focus of the Rambam, what does a Jew have to believe? What are the articles of faith? What are the few basic principles that every Jew has to be firm about in their belief? I imagine a lot of people wouldn't even know. And even if there is 13 articles of faith, how many of those, if I would ask somebody, I'm not going to call Marla, I'm not calling you or anybody, right at the top of your head, what are those, Marla already warned me to not call on her, so, what are those 13 articles of faith? So you started thinking, okay, which of those articles of faith have a song that's attached to them? Well, I'll start with those. If it has a song, so maybe then. If there's no song, so then, forget it. But again, it's an understudied and underappreciated area. It's something that I want to discuss the next couple of weeks. So tonight I'm going to discuss a little bit of the background and I guess the tochen and the substance of the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikarim. And next week we're going to discuss the issue about some of the controversy over those 13 Ikarim. And it's a controversy that comes to this day. The Rambam was a person He was like this larger-than-life person, and we'll talk about the Rambam's life in a second, but most of what the Rambam wrote about, to this day, 800 years later, is still spoken about and debated, and every day there's a new book about it, and even recently, the last 15 years, there's a very, very, famous book, essentially completely attacking the Rambam and the Yigam Ikari, and that's something we'll discuss a little bit in Miris Hashem next week. Let me give you a little bit of a history of the writing of the Rambam is Yud Gimel Yikarim, and a little bit of the Rambam, just like sort of like a thumbnail sketch about the Rambam. Even throw out a question. Anybody know where and when the Rambam was born?
Spain.
There you go. So the Rambam was born in Spain. He was born in Cordova, which is still a vibrant Spanish city today. Anybody know around what year? But I mentioned this before, and this is, by the way, no offense to many of the wonderful girls, the Golds and the Seagulls, their daughters who went to Bat Torah. I mentioned this just as a humorous aside. My first year teaching high school, I taught ninth grade girls in Bat Torah many, many years ago. And, usually when I'll teach a class, I'll say, okay, who wrote this, and where did the person live, and when did they live, sort of what I'm doing now. So I say, anybody know like where the Rambam lived? And I didn't really have a real sense, what a ninth grade girl should know. My kids were either non-existent or very, very young. So the girls was looking at me like dumbfounded. Oh, who knows? A Rambam, I said, girls, anybody know where the Rambam live? Still no response. I said, so I called on the girl. I said, you, where do you think? She said, Brooklyn? So for any of you who are going to say Brooklyn, so I had like every ounce of koach. I'm like, oh, that's such a great answer, and koach kavod, and so many Spanish Jews live in Brooklyn, but Brooklyn, so I tried to best my abilities to sort of smooth it over. Anyway, the Rambam was not born in Brooklyn. The Rambam was born in Cordova, Spain, in the year 1135. And if you would trace any of the lives of any of the Rishonim, none of them had what you would call boring lives. And usually, the quote-unquote excitement of their lives were not of their own doing, were not of their own making, but they usually had to travel from country to country. The persecution in those days was awful. Most of the persecution, just out of curiosity, was it perpetrated by the Christians or the Muslims? By the Christians, right. So by the Christians, we're so used to sort of, our allies, quote-unquote, are sort of more the Christians nowadays than the Muslims are not. So most of the Rishonim, almost all the Rishonim, suffered in some way at the hands of the Christians. Even the Rishonim living in Spanish countries, the perpetrators and the persecutors were Christians. But the Rambam had to deal with a group of people called the Almohadians. Anybody hear the shorish of that word? Almohadians. Right, well, yeah, that's what you would think. But it's the people that believe that God was one, Chad, as opposed to the Christians. And they were incredibly radical. These were like the original Al-Qaeda-niks, the original ISIS-niks. And they were, every time you speak about this, you have to update who they were the original. There's like a new group of people that who the Almohadians were the forerunners to. The Rambam had to leave his house at a very early age. He traveled. It wasn't even clear where they were traveling to, but they were traveling everywhere, country to country. They came to Fez, Morocco. They came to Akko and Eretz Yisrael. And finally, the Rambam, in about the year 1160, settled first in Alexandria and then in Cairo, where he spent most of his life afterwards. And the Rambam, you say this about everybody. Everyone's a genius, that person's a genius. The Rambam was a true genius. From an early age, he was writing vociferously on every topic. And even when he was traveling from place to place as a teenager, think about some of your kids as 13-year-olds, the Rambam was printing tshuvos, response. He was printing all sorts of things at an early age. But his first major sefer was written roughly around the year 1163. During that period of time, just to give you a little bit of a sense of the Rambam, those were the Rambam's best years, 1160 to 1168. And the reason was, anybody who has children in Shiduchim or siblings, or the Rambam had a very, very, very wealthy brother. And because he had a wealthy brother, the brother was involved in trades and in diamonds. So that let the Rambam just sit as in his 20s and to write and to learn. And that was the Rambam's glory years. But unfortunately, in the year 1168, the Rambam's brother died in a shipping accident. And the Rambam, which is sort of interesting to say of a person, if he was such a rational person, the Rambam wrote about himself that he went into like a deep, deep depression. The Rambam said he couldn't move for a year. It's amazing that somebody's sort of writing about themselves. He was in bed for a year, he couldn't do anything, and when he sort of came back in 1169, by then already, you know, there were so many responsibilities and bills and the family, etc., so that he pursued also his medical degree and being a doctor, and the Rambam went on to be, of course, you know, the doctor of the Sultan, all while leading the Jewish community, all while writing the Mishneh Torah, the Moreh Nevuchim, etc., etc. So in 1163, the Rambam wrote really the first of his major works. Anybody know what the first of his works were? So this first, was that? The first of his major works, the Rambam has three major works. He has a commentary in the Mishnah, and that was the work that was written in 1163, that was written in Arabic. The Mishneh Torah, which is his sort of magnum opus on halacha, that was written in Hebrew. And the Moreh Nevuchim, which is Book of Philosophy, that was also written in Arabic. And he has more minor svarim and other letters as well. But this was a commentary, and it was really the first of its kind, that he wrote a commentary on the Mishnah. It was something that was really not done before then. It was not done up until that point. And besides being a fascinating commentary in the Mishnah, the Rambam has a number of articles in this commentary in the Mishnah that really is very significant. One major thing is at the very beginning of Zra'im, which is the first of the six portions of the Mishnah, the Rambam has a long introduction to the Gemara, how the Torah was given, how it was passed down, who taught who, and it's a very fascinating piece. The Rambam has a very long introduction to Pirkei Avos, all about ethics, called Shmona Prakim. And the Rambam, maybe most famously, at the very beginning of what's called Perek HaChelek. Perek HaChelek is the 10th Perek of Maseches Sanhedrin that deals with issues of the afterlife and philosophy. The Rambam has a long introduction to this Perek HaChelek, which we'll read a little bit tonight, discussing all the various principles of faith. And in this introduction is where he lays out these 13 principles of what every Jew has to believe. Again, in his commentary on the Mishnah, his commentary on the last Perek of Maseches Sanhedrin. A friend of mine, Rabbi David Gottlieb, pointed out that in many ways, this commentary of the Mishnah and these 13 principles of faith might have been the Rambam's longest lasting contribution to Jewish scholarship. And what I mean by that is, let's say the Sefer the Mishneh Torah, that probably most people here have either learned or seen or heard of, it's not something that we paskin halacha off of, right? It's not something that you open up the Rambam and say, what's the halacha based on the Rambam? It's very important, but not everyone's going to base himself on it. It's maybe more for Sfarim and Ashkenazim. The Moreh Nevuchim, which is a book of philosophy, is also very important. But many, many people reject the Moreh Nevuchim. Many people found it very controversial. Many people said, you shouldn't learn the Moreh Nevuchim. I don't know, people may be aware of the fact. Anybody know? They burned the Moreh Nevuchim, right? And no one would burn the Moreh Nevuchim nowadays. But again, it's a very controversial. It's not learned by the average person. If you go knocking on the door of almost any yeshiva, no one learns the Moreh Nevuchim. So it's something that's a great work, but it's not sort of ubiquitous. It's not been accepted by like all of Klal Yisrael. The one thing which really is lasting and remaining are these principles, these 13 principles of the Rambam that to a large, large degree have become popularized and they become sort of ubiquitous, that people know about it, and therefore it's sort of the article in the Rambam, so to speak, that has almost had the greatest widespread acceptance. Now why is it that these Rambam's 13 principles have become so famous, have become so popular? Because they're in the Yigdal. So what happened was, and that's really the real reason, if the Rambam's 13 principles were just left in a pretty esoteric, if I ask you a question, how many of you have learned the Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah to the beginning of the 10th Perek of Achelek? I don't want to ask people's hands, but it would be a small response. And maybe if it was sort of just left at that, to some degree it would be famous, but sort of not everyone would be aware of these 13 articles. But what ended up happening is that they sort of got sieged upon by later authors. First by Yigdal. Now Yigdal is something, Yigdal has the unfortunate, what would you say? The unfortunate distinction of coming at the end of davening, right? So, you know, at the end of davening, especially the Yigdal, at least you have it a Friday night, you know. But whatever you would put at the end of davening on Shabbos morning, you know, Mashiach Tikenu could arrive walking into shul on a white donkey. You know, people would still be folding their talisim and sort of, you know, ready to get to the Kiddush and all sorts of other things. So a lot of people probably don't even like learn Yigdal. If I ask you, what does Yigdal talk about? But if you read through quickly Yigdal, so you'll see that Yigdal is sort of like a summary of these 13 principles of faith. And people were in shul on Friday night, so we know the last of the statements. Hey guys, please. So that the last of the statements of Meisim Yechayel is repeated twice. Why is it repeated twice? Because there's 13 lines, and we need an even number, because those 13 lines correlate to the 13 principles of faith. This was written, anybody know when Yigdal was written? It's actually pretty old. And by the way, Yigdal was written sort of as a piyut, as like a paragraph of faith. Supposedly there were hundreds of people who did this exact same thing, taking the Rambam's 13 articles of faith, and then sort of putting them into this form. Yigdal, I don't know why, became sort of famous, got put in a siddur, but there was, you know, hundreds of people who did this. It was written in the 14th century by a very, very little known Rishon. And then the Ani Mamins were written probably about 200 years later, the 16th century. Anybody know who wrote the Ani Mamins? What's that? Dvekus. There you go. At least Joel knows what Dvekus is. You know, it's not Led Zeppelin or someone like it. So Dvekus, Baruch Hashem, made their living off the Ani Mamins and other such things. But the reality is, it's sort of a trick question. Nobody knows who wrote these Ani Mamins. No one knows who came ahead and penned these. It's really amazing. You know, the Ani Mamins are sort of how many hundreds of thousands of people went to their deaths sort of reciting this. It became so popular. We don't know who wrote it, where it came from, how it got into the Siddur, when it got into the Siddur, but clearly at some point people realized that this was a pretty good representation, not a perfect representation, but a pretty good representation of the Rambam, and it sort of gained traction, and now is in the Siddur. I want to do just, maybe it's a little bit slow, but just I mentioned before, probably many of us don't even know the Ani Mamins. I just want to sort of maybe go through and read them quickly, and read them sort of together. So Ani Mamin Muna Shalema, Shehabari Yisbarach Shemo, Hu Borei Umanig L'chol Abruim. Andy, you want a copy? We have extra. Anybody who's came in, we have extra copies. So God essentially is the God of the world. He created everything. God created everything, and He's going to make everything, etc. So Ani Mamun Shalema Shabar Yisbarach Shemo Hu Yochid Ve'en Yichidus Kamohu B'Shum Panim. God is one, right? What do we say? Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. God is a singular being. Anybody know what that means, by the way? God is one. It's not exactly a very clear statement. When we speak about the Yichud Hashem, the oneness of God, it's not exactly clear what we mean by that. But again, that's a principle favorite of the Rambam, of the oneness of God's existence. Ani Mamin B'Muna Sholema Shabar Yisparach Shemo Ein Oguf. He has no body. The God has no body, and then this Sunday actually there was
contrary to the Trinity as well. As
okay, Joel. So you're well ahead of us. What?
The Greeks and Romans also had many gods.
Right. Okay. So hold on to that for 1 second. But the Rambam, this is a major idea. The Rambam believes in this idea. Anybody know the fancy schmancy word for this principle? Begins with an A, that anthropomorphism, which is like a little bit of a mouthful, namely that God has no being, God has no physicality, God has no goof, God has no anything, but sometimes the Torah just conveys it in those terms. The hand of God, the voice of God, all those things, that the Torah is conveying God in this human way, but the reality is that God has no goof. If I ask you a question, by the way, before we move on, do you think that most people agreed with this Rambam? No. Which is the Rambam? So Beth assumed yes, right? David assumes no. So David's actually right. This was a major, major issue back in the times of the Rishonim about whether or not there are many Rishonim that believe, no, God does have some type of physical being, some type of physical presence that's out there. And again, this is something that we'll discuss a lot more, but this was a huge, huge issue, this debate, back in the time of the Rishonim. So Ani Mamin...
Sorry to disturb you, but...
No. Anybody wants to yell? Yeah.
So why are we learning the Shoshana Sar Ikrim as opposed to the actual language of the Rambam?
Okay, so just to clarify what Yudi said, the Rambam was like any good Jewish rabbi, and not to be self-denigrating, the Rambam, what was taken, you know, 20 lines over here, the Rambam wrote in 25 pages. Mm-hmm. and also wrote in language that is sort of, you know, medieval. Thank you. I'm not sure it is a help at this point, but yeah, sort of medieval language. So it's not particularly clear. So if you want to learn it, by all means. But you know, you're not gonna, you know, on your way to 8,000 things, you know, stop. I mean, why are we doing it together?
No, well, I mean, I understand that.
Yeah.
But the point is that each one of these items, the language is so crucial, and you could talk about each one for 3 hours.
Absolutely, right.
So, you know, it's hard to say, all right, here's the first one.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Listen, so each one of these things, and Yudi is right, are things that you can ask 1,000 questions about. Many of these things are debated. We're going to talk about some of them more in depth down the road. But again, you know, each one of these articles themselves is a three-part shiur in of itself. Belief in God, you know, the oneness of God, all those things. And you're right, you know, if we had sort of a longer period of time to do this, you know, we would do that. We would sort of go more one by one. But at the very least, for now, I want to make sure everyone has like a general sense of what's included in those 13 principles of faith. And as we go through them, I'll sort of maybe point out some that might be sort of more controversial than less controversial. Okay, so Ani Mamav Muna Shalema, this is number 4. Shabar Yisbar Shmo, Hu Rishon Hu Acharon. Anybody know what that means? It's a very fancy Latin word, right?
He's infinite.
He's infinite. And there's also, anybody know who was the major influence on the Rambam in regards to philosophy? Aristotle, right? That's part of the controversy over the Mor Nevuchim, was that the Rambam clearly sees the person who, Aristotle, as sort of like being his Rebbe in philosophy. Although if you know philosophy well, the Rambam is actually probably more similar to Plato than Aristotle. Maybe that's like a different conversation. But the one area that the Rambam very much parts ways with Aristotle, and that's part of the reason it's here, is that the Aristotle believes in the idea of existence before creation, right? Meaning there was such a thing called matter, there was such a thing called space, there was such a thing called being, and then God sort of formed the world based on that. The Rambam says if you believe that, you're a total kofar, you're a total non-believer. The Rambam believed in the idea of creatio ex nihilo, creation that came from nothing, and that's what's implied in this, or that's what's sort of stated in this Ani Mamid, Hu Rishon Hu Acharon. Now, what Acharon means, that's a little more difficult. You know, we know what it means that he's a Rishon. What it means that he's the Acharon, that's actually
he's
something which
still
is
involved.
What's that?
He's still
involved,
he
right?
Walk away. He's still here.
Right. There's he didn't walk away, so that could be. That's what some people assume in the Rambam. Which, by the way, people who know anything about sort of modern day philosophy, that's also a theory. Anybody know who had that theory in philosophy? Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, people, the deists. The deists said, God created the world, and then, you know, my job is done, goodbye. What's that? It's like, you know, and then it's finished. It's saying Hu Acharon means like he's still here, he's still involved, okay? Yeah, Sean?
He doesn't pay attention. I mean, he's finished. He's
right, exactly, which has sort of changed the whole, yeah. Right, okay, so number 5. So, Ani Mamed Muna Shalema, Shabar Yisbarach Shmo, Lo Levado Ro'oi Lehispalel, Ve'en Lezula So Ro'oi Lehispalel. God is the only one who's worth davening to, and there's no one else there to daven to. Anybody want to ask a question, by the way, on sort of the statement, this Ani Mamed? That God's the only one that one would daven to, there's no one else to daven to.
No intermediaries. I mean,
right,
would be.
So you, right.
You can't daven to the Avos,
right.
You can't...
No, but also what the Rambam has been saying is that there's no other gods out there in the world, there's no Avodah Zarah. The Rambam probably could have sort of seen other ways of stating that other than sort of the way that the Rambam in fact did say that. Okay, these 5 Ani Mamins are sort of like the God Ani Mamins, right? And then we're going to move on to a different sort of segment. So Ani Mamin Mun Shalema Shekol Divrei Nevi'im Emes. Everything that Nevi'im said are truthful. Ani Mamin Mun Shalema Shenevuas Moshe Rabbeinu Adlav HaShalom Haisa Amitis Veshuhaya Av LeNevi'im LaKodmim LeFanav LeBoim Acharov. That Moshe Rabbeinu is sort of the ultimate authority. He was the original of the prophets, etc., etc. And we're going to see in a second a little bit of the background of this, of that Rambam.
What happens to Avraham Yitzchak?
What? So we don't view, that's the assumption of the Gemara, that the Avos were Nevi'im. That's what the Gemara seems to assume, but it's a very good question. Okay. So Ani Mamim Una Shalema Shekola Torah Mitsuya Ata Biodeinu Hi Hanesuna Lemoshe Rabbeinu Alav HaShalom. This is a little bit, I would say, of a controversial statement, but the entire Torah that we have was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. And again, some of the Rishonim sort of discuss and debate this of the Ani Mamins. Okay, and Imam Ibn Munishalema, Shazos Torah Lotehe Muchlefes, Lotehe Torah Acheres, Me'ei Sabori Yisfar Shemo, it can't be traded in, it's not replaceable, there's not going to be another Torah, this always was and always will be the Torah. Right? Again, these are sort of things, some of these things are sort of echoes of some sort of the feelings of controversy that even exist today. You know, and certainly a lot of the, you know, nowadays we don't really sort of think about conservative Judaism anymore, Reform Judaism, but these are certainly a lot of the issues and the back and forth with the formation of conservative Judaism. Okay, it's moving on. Animam ibn Shalema Shabar Yisvar Shmo Yodea Komasib Ne Adam Vichol Machshavo Sam Shenemar Hayotzer Yachel Libam Hamevin El Komaseyem, that God knows all of the thoughts and the actions of man. Anybody know anything controversial about this Rambam? Anybody want to venture a guess? Okay, so this actually probably, what's that? Well, yeah, but yeah, so that's a problem that's sort of like an old problem. But so this topic itself might be worth sort of discussing more down the road in a separate shiur, namely, where does God's hashgacha apply to? How is God involved in the world? What does God know? What does God see? So there's some people that did not like this Rambam. They thought the Rambam was too liberal, that the Rambam didn't go far enough. Why not? Anybody sort of can see an issue that people might have had in this Rambam? What does the Rambam say? That God sees the thoughts and the actions of every person, right? To the exclusion of
the dropping of a bird.
To the droppings of a bird. Thank you, Brian, for that. You know, very yeah. The droppings of a bird. The dropping of a bird. I thought you said droppings. That was more descriptive. So in other words, Rambam says that the hashgacha of God applies to the realm of man, does not apply to the realm of animals. And there are many people that one of the major fights against the Rambam, it was actually about exactly this point, that God's hashgacha applied to everything in the universe, and not just man, sort of, who was also a creation of God. So, Ani Mamed Muna Shalema, Shabar Yisvar Shmo, Gomel Tov, L'Shomrei Mitzvosav, Umanish L'Ovrei Mitzvosav, how would you say this in shorthand? Right? Schar V'Onesh. There's reward and punishment, that one's deeds are rewarded, one's averus are punished. Ani Mamed Muna Shalema, V'Vias HaMashiach, V'Alpha Pisha Yismameya, Im Kol Zeh, right, Ahava Achakelo. You should mess up on those words. Right, Bechol Yom Sheyavo. We believe, of course, in the coming of the Messiah. Okay, and lastly, so Ani Mamu Shalema Shatia Tchias Amesim BeEish Sheyala Rotzam Eis Habori Yisfar Shemo VeYisalez Zichro LaAdol Nitzach Nitzachim. That there's such a concept called Tchias Mesim, which of course is the how do you say Tchias Mesim in English?
Resurrection.
The resurrection of the dead. Now, I just point out, before we sort of move on from this list, that this was actually something that was a very, very controversial idea in the Rambam. Anybody have any idea, sort of, the background behind this? The idea of Tchias HaMeisim? Well, it's not that it's controversial per se. If I ask you to describe Tchias HaMeisim, if you ever even sort of stop to think about such a question, what does Tchias HaMeisim look like in your imagination? Again, it's like a little bit of a difficult concept, right? So the Rambam seemed to imply in the Mishneh Torah that what Tchias HaMeisim is the sort of the resuscitation of the soul. The soul sort of be alive or come back to life. And many, many people sort of picked up on that in the Rambam and they said it's not true. It's not just the soul. It's not just the nefesh. But the whole body in some way is going to have some type of like physical rebirth. And the Rambam had to go ahead, and because so many people were sort of screaming about the Rambam had to sort of then go ahead and write a separate sefer called Mamar Tchias HaMeisim, a separate sort of pamphlet, to sort of let people know that, no, I really do believe, even though it's not a rational idea, I really do believe in this concept. But let me just give you a little bit of a sense, and we'll get to sort of Joel's point, as to why it is that the Rambam, to some degree, felt the need, just sort of flip the page over to page 2, felt the need to even sort of discuss a lot of these topics. The Rambam has, throughout his Svarim, the Rambam has a lot on philosophy, on belief, on ideology, what does a person have to believe, understanding of God, and a lot of that comes from the fact, and I don't want to read too much inside, that what the Rambam was really dealing with was, even perhaps in his time, people who believed that Judaism was about actions. Judaism was about a masa, right? okay, I believe this, I don't believe that, I have doubts about this, I have doubts about, you know, Tchias HaMesim, I have doubts about Mashiach, but you know what, you know, I'm a good person, and I, you know, stand up for people on the bus, and I keep Shabbos, and I keep kosher, and blah, 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 and you know, that's it. And the Rambam very much, so what became even back in the time of the Rambam, was sort of a culture of deed over creed, action over belief. And the Rambam sort of goes out of his way time again and time again to make sure people, no, that first and foremost, what Judaism is about are thoughts and beliefs and ideology. Let me give you a little bit of a sense on the bottom of page number 2. Page number 2, it comes from Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya wrote to Chovos Levavos. He wrote it actually before the time of the Rambam. And Rabbeinu Bachya said in his introduction to Chovos Levavos, he said, I look around the world, and nobody's talking about the obligations of the heart. Everyone's talking about the obligations of how many hours to keep between meat and milk, and what to do, but how about the Chovos Levavos? How about the obligations of one's heart? So he has a very, very sharp line. Take a look at line number 2. I want to say apologize. I'm a little bit like a crazy underliner. I don't know if you do this like with your books, but sometimes I'll have like a Gemara or a Sefer book. I'll have double underlines and then arrows and then brackets. And my kids are like, you know, how many different ways do you have to sort of point out that this is like an important passage? So most of my Svarim, I have like these, you know, single underlines and double underlines. And you'll see for a second why I was so excited by this passage in Rabbeinu Bachya. He says, V'miyad l'b'machshavaseinu, if we would think She'ein liboseinu chayavim livchor ba'avodas Hashem v'lachbotzba, if we think that our hearts, and what he means by hearts is he means our hearts and minds are not equally obligated, if not more so, listen to this language. Yistalek me'al evereinu chiyuv hamitzvos shanu chayavim bahem. If we weren't obligated in the philosophy and the ideology and the thoughts and the feelings, there'd be no obligation on our bodies, right? If we didn't have a clear conception of God, belief in God, and all these things, actions would mean absolutely nothing. And therefore, it says the Chovos Levavos, and this is clear where the Rambam is coming from, it is imperative that every person has sort of a proper lave and a proper thought process. This is a very strong language, because the action itself really is not complete or even meaningful without sort of the soul and the mind also being engaged, right? And you sort of continue in the Chovos Levavos, you see that, and there's a lot of discussion that the Rambam believes that. The Rambam wrote his most famous work, as I said, was called Mishneh Torah, right? Anybody know how many different Svarim are in Mishneh Torah?
14.
Anybody know the name of the first of this? And Mishneh Torah was a book of halacha. It was an encyclopedia of halacha. The first of the books is called, anybody know? It's called Sefer Mada, which is the book of philosophy. The first of the laws in the book of philosophy is Yesodei HaTorah, which is all about belief in God. It's a very strong statement that what halacha really is, first and foremost, is belief, thoughts, ideology, much more so than any action a person can do, and that's a lot of what informed the Rambam's writings. Now, we're going to see in a second a paragraph of the Rambam. Does it say anywhere, can anybody think of places, can we have a very educated crowd, of in the Gemara or in the Torah telling us what we have to believe? Does it speak about Schar V'Onesh in a very clear way in the Torah? Can anybody think of any place? Yeah, Shema would definitely sort of be the place, although it's not clear. It doesn't like Shema would be a place where it speaks about Schar V'Onesh, reward and punishment. It doesn't tell us, though.
The Ten Commandments
speaks about belief in God, not having Avodah Zarah. But the Ten Commandments is interesting, because Ten Commandments is belief in God, Avodah Zarah. What's that?
It says you have to honor your parents.
Right, honor your parents. Don't testify falsely. That's nowhere here.
The curses,
but doesn't really go through anywhere in the Torah, if you think about it in your head, like a list of what are the real beliefs, what are the key beliefs, what are the sort of the red line you can't cross. So Yudi points out, you're right, every single day, two times a day, three times a day, we say Kriya Shema, V'Hayayim Shemoa, if you listen, then X, Y, and Z. Does it ever lay that out as a principle of faith? Right? Is there anywhere that you can sort of think about where the Torah tells us, yeah, these are the principles? Kim points out that Sarah said Dibros, 10 commandments, but those aren't the 13 principles. You know, what are those exactly versus what the Rambam is speaking about? The Mishnah, the Gemara, even the Chumash does not give a very clear list. And then you'll see what a huge chiddush the Rambam is, because the Rambam essentially said, it never says it anywhere, but let me tell you exactly, you know, what are the fundamental principles. Where does it speak about this a little bit? And you'll see the sort of, we're going to go back to page 2, but flip over to page 3 for a second. And I want to read through this Mishnah, and then you'll tell me immediately what's surprising, shocking, curious about this Mishnah. Now this is the Mishnah, by the way, that the Rambam comments on, that the Rambam goes through these 13 principles. Kol Yisrael Yesham Chelek L'Olam Haba. Where do we know that from more famously? Pirkei Avos. It's not really in Pirkei Avos, but we sort of put it in the Siddurim before Pirkei Avos, but it comes from this Mishnah. Now this Mishnah is one of the great teases of all time. Why is it a great tease? Everybody has a portion of the world to come, right? Now, usually if you're a Jew, what do you expect the next word to be? Right. Except for, everyone has a place in the world to come, but let's make things more complicated, with the exception of the following 97 people, or whatever the list might be, Shenemar, right, the Amech Klum Tzadikim, etc. Okay? Just going to the next line, the Eilu She'elam Chelek L'Olam Haba. Everyone has a share in the world to come, besides these people. Okay? Ha'omer, Ein Techiyas Emesim Min HaTorah. There is no such thing as the Brian, the resurrection of the dead. Now, by the way, anybody sort of see anything curious about this line? So, first of all, we don't even know where it comes from in the Torah. The fact that this would be the first person, right? You think of all the people and all the words that are thrown around. This person's a kofar, and this would be sort of like the major thing sort of stated in the Mishnah. It's a little bit curious.
If the Mishnah has to state it. Right. And obviously people thought.
So what Brian is pointing out, the Mishnah has to state it because it's responding back to whatever sort of the feelings of the day might have been. Okay, that's number one. The Ein Torah Min HaShemayim. Okay, Torah is not from heaven. That's number two. Vapikoris. It's sort of like, you know, nowadays, everybody and their mother is Napikoris. We don't know who Napikoris is, who Napikoris... Anybody who's anybody is in Cherim, Napikoris. What an Apikoris actually is something that the Gemara discusses, but not necessarily our topic, but Apikoris is like a very specific connotation, right? Nowadays, you call everyone Apikoris. The Gemara has a much clearer designation of what it is. That's sort of the top three. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Af HaKorei B'Svarim HaKitzonim. What does that mean? Okay. Anybody who reads outside books. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, we're looking at Beth's beautiful pile of books over here. You know, great job. I'm leaving this. You know. Okay, so it's not necessarily talking about that, but that's fascinating. You know, that's a person that's going to sort of make it onto the list. Right? The Halochesh Ahamaka. You know, okay, Joel, it's a good thing you're an allergist and not a dermatologist, or, you know, not, no offense to Steve Walensky and others. Haloche shel hamaka, what's that, like sort of whispering into a wound. Again, not our topic, but certainly an interesting topic. Okay, and then the last line of the Mishnah, Abashol Omer, Afahoge es Hashem Ba'otzi Osav. Right? For those of you who are non-Kohanim, Mickey's already busy during Birchas Kohanim, but for those of us other than Mickey and Lloyd, so then you have on the when the last paragraph in Birchas Kohanim, everyone knows what I'm speaking about, you see God's name, right? And the art scroll tells us, do not read these letters, right? Because that is God's real name. Everybody know the real term for that? I can't even spell it. Might help me out. Exactly. So that, right? It's like it's God's long name, and anybody who reads that carefully, that person does not have like a share in the world to come as well. Okay. So just be warned during Birchas Kohanim. Now, anybody see anything highly unusual about this list?
Mention mass murderers.
Right. Okay. No. Kim, so you're saying something very right. The mass murderer, the Charles Mansons. So those guys are not on the list, and we're going to see for 1 second there's a good reason for it. But forget about even the mass murderers. The Rambam goes ahead and says, these are the 13 principles of faith. These are the 13 principles you have to believe in. Basing himself sort of on this Mishnah, that is sort of the one place this topic is really spoken about. But this Mishnah gives us very little. says Tchias Meisim, Torah is not from Shemayim, from heaven, and an Apikoros. And the guy who whispers into the wound, and the guy who is reading secular novels, and you know all those things. But even like the place where you would think the rabbi would base himself on, you know, there's sort of this very little, it's very, very skimpy to say that these are the things that sort of get you out of heaven. Brian?
And it's a reverse. Because really, it's telling you the people who aren't, and he's reading out.
And the Rambam is telling you the people who do, right?
Saying, okay, so these people don't,
right?
Which obviously, anything they believe,
sure.
And so then he has to reverse it out,
absolutely,
and create something
else. Right. So the point that I want to bring up is just that the Rambam is a kiddush, right? The Rambam to sort of go ahead and say, I'm going to tell you the 13 things that you need to do to have a share in the world to come, and if you don't do them, you don't have a share in the world to come. The Rambam clearly is basing himself on Pesukim and Gemaras, but there's no place that explicitly says that, and the Rambam really is a kiddush. Now that leads a person to question, anybody have a question then? Right? If the Rambam is sort of going out of his way to state these are the 13 people or concepts you have to believe in, so, okay. So Brian sort of alludes to this beforehand. Brian, what do you say before? Right? What's leading the Rambam to feel he has to do this? Right? What's the Rambam responding to? Why does the Rambam feel he has to do this? Why does the Rambam all of a sudden in the year 1163 wake up and say, "I want to tell you what you have to believe in"? In a very clear, distinct, dogmatic type of way, what led the Rambam to such a necessity?
What makes it right if it's not from Torah anyway? Like, well, if he's saying you have to have these beliefs or you're not.
Okay, so you're really actually raising the issue that people have sort of raised over the years. How does the Rambam get this from? Where does the Rambam know?
And should we take it as fact?
Right. And how do we know we take it as fact? Right. And that's actually a great, great question. And something we're going to discuss a little bit, because that issue, which really is a huge issue, because it really sort of makes a distinction of, to some degree, who's a Jew and who's not a Jew, is so significant. You know, do we have to take sort of the Rambam as fact? Is this sort of the last word, so to speak, about belief and faith and those types of things? And again, so this is not a plug for next week, but let's come back next week and we'll discuss it at that point.
Just a related question, what was happening before the Rambam?
Okay, so that's really the question. The question is, what was happening before the time of the Rambam?
He lived in Spain. The Christians were coming into it, taking over from the Muslims.
Right.
And
okay, excellent. Right, and that's sort of what Joel was saying before also. So let me mention, there's so much, as you can see, to talk about on this topic. We're not going to have a chance to do everything or to read everything inside. But if you look over here on page 3, I have something photocopied from J. David Bleich. Anybody here, everyone here, of Rabbi Dr. Bleich? Rabbi Dr. Bleich is one of, maybe one of the top 3 smartest people to like ever walk the face of the earth. It's not like much of an exaggeration. Dr. Bleich has a degree in medicine, has a degree in law, teaches at Cardozo Law School, is a Rosh Yeshiva in NYU, has written like dozens of books. I got just to tell you what a genius Rabbi Bleich is. I got a book, a safe from him in the mail about 10 years. Oh, it's a bad cramp. I apologize. We'll try to erase that from the tapes. Okay, we got a sefer in the mail. That's got cramp. I apologize. About keeping halacha on the moon, an 80-page sefer, 78-page sefer, keeping halacha on the moon. So this sort of tells you where like Rabbi Bleich's head's at. He's just this uber genius. And before doing any of those things, he also got a PhD in philosophy, Jewish philosophy as well. So he's a very, very, very impressive person. And he wrote a sefer. He wrote a book called Imperfect Faith, which I have at home. People want to borrow it. And also, just a few years ago, YU published some of his like philosophical treatises on different topics, which I photocopied this from. Rabbi Bleich gives 2 different theories, but these are sort of well-known theories of why the Rambam felt the need to do this. One was to really counteract a lot of the ideology that had existed in that day. Anybody want to point to something and sort of see how the Rambam is writing something as a rejection or as a response to what was going on in his day?
As Muslims were there, they think that the Quran is the true.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
So if he's living in a Muslim world where the majority of people are saying, well, the Jews got it wrong and Muhammad was said to get it right, he's saying, no, you have to believe that this is the only Torah,
exactly.
The one and only Torah.
Kim, so you know what? So Kim basically said it, but just go to line 5. right after what I underlined. This is page 3, J. David Bleich. Thus the doctrine of the unity of God had to be reiterated to counteract the polemics of Christians seeking to establish a scriptural basis for the doctrine of the Trinity. But you should know, as I'm sure many people do here know, that a little bit after the time of the Rambam, for hundreds of years, they had these disputations under Ramban in Spain and in France. The disputations, and the major issue was this issue. The issue was, is there a scriptural basis for Jesus? And the Rambam, already sort of anticipating some of that, wrote, no, there's one God, Yichud Hashem, trying to reject, of course, the ideology of Christianity. Just moving a little forward, the supremacy of the prophecy of Moses needed to be underscored in order to emphasize the essential point, the difference between Judaism and Islam, and all these things. So each one of these, one after the other, the Rambam had to do this because the other cultures were making inroads into Judaism, right? And people were confused. What is a Jewish belief? What's a Jewish ideology? The Rambam had to write these things to say, this is who we are, we're not this, we're not that, and this is a true Jewish belief. And that's sort of what Joel said, and that's sort of what Mickey said. Anybody have another theory? If you want to look ahead, it's in the second paragraph, of why the Rambam might have felt the need to do this. And you really sort of have to be very familiar with the Rambam to know this. The Rambam was unique. And was give me a second, actually. That's great water. Thank you. So, the Rambam was unique in the sense that the Rambam was a little bit, and this is something that I've mentioned many times in shul before, the Rambam was like a real intellectual snob, right? And I don't mean that as an insult. If I ask you in your mind's eye, who is sort of at the top of the Jewish totem pole? Who's the person that you view at, you know, you view as being sort of like directly into the world to come? You know, some image of an old man in Yerushalayim, you know, with a beard, some tzaddik, some person that looked, right? For the Rambam, the top person, and the person that's going to get the biggest share of the world to come, let me know who the Rambam said that person is. I mean, I don't mean by a specific name, you know, Moshe Schwartz from Borough Park, but who's the sort of the category of the person that is going to be zoche to the share in the world to come? Smart ones, yeah. So not just smart ones, although smart ones, but somebody that has a real intellectual understanding of God, somebody who's a philosopher. The Rambam wrote the Mor Nevuchim, that's sort of taking like Beth's picture over here, that you know, you have like the average Jew. The average simple Jew, okay, nice guy, good guy, he's sort of like the gardener over here, right? And then you have like this person who's a little bit more thoughtful, a little more philosopher, he's standing by the door, and over here, sort of the top of the palace, is a person who's like the philosopher, who clearly knows God, understands God, has a idea of God, a knowledge of God, can prove God, and that's the person, says the Rambam, along with all the other things as well, that's going to get the portion of the world to come. Now, what was stated, and by the way, take an interesting look at the beginning of paragraph 2, both by Julius Gutmann was a well-known German Jewish philosopher who was not religious, and also by Rabbi Isaac Zev Soloveitchik, the Brisker Rav. Only Rabbi Bleich would sort of know both of these people. You know, both Julius Gutmann and the Brisker Rav. Was that the Rambam wanted to do is, he said, you know what, I know the average person are like all of us. We're not going to be great philosophers. We're not going to read the Mor Nevuchim. We have to go to work. We have to make a living. At the very least, every Jew should have a place in the world to come. So I'll tell you the 13 things you have to believe. And if you know these 13 things about God, about Moses, about prophecy, about Mashiach, so at the very least you'll be able to have a portion of the world to come as well. So Rambam felt it's important that every person just has the basics of ideology, even though they're never going to be perhaps great philosophers. The question is, how seriously did the Rambam take this idea? Again, getting back to what Kim said, getting back to what Debbie said, that these are sort of the important 13 principles. How seriously did the Rambam take this? So I want to show you an unbelievably strong line, or a couple lines in the Rambam. Flip back to page number 2, if you don't mind. Okay. We already explained Tchias Meisim. So the Rambam just sort of wrapped up the 13 principles. Okay? The Kasher Yamin Ha'adam Eila HaYisodos Kulam. Right? When a person believes these 13 things, the Nizbara Emunasu Bahem, he has clear belief in these 13 principles, Hu Nichnas Bichlal Yisrael. If you believe in these 13 principles, God's existence, the legitimacy of the Torah, Mashiach coming, Tchias Mesim, then you have entered into Klal Yisrael. U'mitzvah lahavo, there's a mitzvah to love them. U'larachem, I love, to have mercy on them. V'linhog imo, v'chol mashitziv, Hashem Yisbarach, ish chaveiro. And now we're commanded in everything to this person, min ha'ava, v'achva. If you believe in these things, you are a brother. We love you, we have mercy on you. Okay, v'afilu asa, and Kim, this goes to your point, mashe yocho min ha'averos, machmas hataiva. The guy is off and he's eaten on Yom Kippur every single day of every single year of his life. He is a mass murderer. He says Lashon Hara constantly and all of those things. He's done all of those things. But he has proper belief, right? So the next line, Hunenash kfi chatov, you get punished. Aval yesho chelek lo amhaba. You can be the worst person in the world, but if you believe in these 13 principles, you're into the world to come. V'hu miposhe Yisrael. Okay, so the guy is he's not so smart. U'kishenizkalka v'adam yisod me'ela hayisodos. But if one of these yisodos are niskalkel, what's niskalkel? What's the best? They're destroyed, they're off, they're a little bit, they're diluted, they're okay. Even according to the Rambam, even if you have a doubt about any of these things, harayotza min haklal, the kofar be'ikar. You don't believe one of these 13 principles of faith, you're considered to be a kofar be'ikar, you're yotza min haklal. You are now sort of out of the team, you're off the club, so to speak. Now this Rambam is quite a chiddush. You know, we grew up thinking that a Jew, not that we ever want to evaluate another Jew, you know, Shabbos, Kashrus. The Rambam says, forget about Shabbos and Kashrus. It's also important. But the real essence, instead of finding out a shidduch about a person, you know, of what, you know, you really have to find out, or what's really central, it's really key for the Rambam, are these 13 principles of faith. Does anybody have a question on this Rambam? Anybody have a comment? Anybody have a concern? Yes,
David. If one of them is, as I from the understanding, I think that is that the Torah is made Moshe Mi-Sinai.
Right.
That all of conservative Judaism, that's what they do. So do they not care about the 13 principles?
Well, so I certainly couldn't say that. You know, there's differences of opinion. Clearly, the conservative movement, you know, has gone in a different direction away from these 13 principles. Doesn't mean that we treat people any differently. But what that is really raising is a good point, is how do we view people nowadays? If you were a person, let's say back in the time of the Rambam, 1163, where you got up and you said, the Torah is not from Sinai, right? You were doing this because you knew a lot, you were well-educated, you learned everything, you knew all the psukim, you knew everything, and you got up and you said, I don't believe in it. And that person, we would say, you're a heretic. I don't mean to be crude, right? But it's clear, as light of day nowadays, it's not true nowadays. You know, an average person who doesn't believe in Mosaic law or the things, it's not because they're a heretic. People don't know, they don't know, they're not, whatever the case is. So this whole sort of strong position of the Rambam, they're not part of Israel, we don't love them, they're not this, clearly it's not really applied nowadays, and it's not me just saying this, some type of, you know, modern Orthodox YU rabbi, but the Chazon Ish, who was the leader of the Haredi community in Bnei Brak, he himself said it. That people nowadays, we're not going to go ahead and exclude people because of that, right?
I'd like to go back to the other side of that coin.
Uh-oh.
The one who.
It's a good thing Debbie's not here.
The one who believes everything.
Right.
Okay, he believes everything. But I believe it, but I'm not following it.
Right. Okay. So then the.
And
so,
they're okay.
Right. Well, it's not that you're okay. It's not that you're okay. Listen, it's that. Right. So you know, just look at it this way. Right.
I believe God is great.
Right. I believe God is great.
I'm not going to keep his mitzvahs.
Right. Okay.
It sounds like that person is even more.
God don't believe in rituals.
Right. So then, okay. So it would seem to be the, you know, that would be the case. Now,
the one who doesn't believe, you have to give.
Judaism itself is a religion of doing,
right?
And that your actions are so much more important than your actually even than your intent,
right?
So it doesn't fit. The whole thing doesn't fit,
right? So that Kim, idea. So what?
You could have a person right. who has tremendous, wonderful actions all the time,
right.
and says, "I'm not really sure about this."
Sure.
That all the everything that the prophet said was right.
Well, so let me just be clear for the Rambam. The Rambam clearly says, or would clearly say, the Rambam has a whole list of halacha about behavior and murder and kashrus and lashon hara. The Rambam is not discounting any of that. The question would be, and clearly, your behavior needs to reflect it, and the Rambam says this in every single line, but as far as what is the criteria, what is the fundamental criteria of being a Jew, would be belief. Now, that doesn't stand by itself. That's the fundamental criteria for Judaism, right? And then every single thing after then, you know, supports that, builds on it, is important, you're judged on it, etc. But as far as we have to look for the Rambam of the most fundamental piece, more so would be belief than action. Action being critical, but certainly more so belief. But yeah, Robert.
This is confusing, especially with some of the Tchias HaMaisim, where it isn't clear what he's saying, to say that we have to leave all 13 things, including that, and we're not even quite sure what that means.
Right.
Many of us would say, I'm not quite sure what that is, but that's...
And Robert, and I want to take this even one step further, and something we'll discuss a little bit next week also. There are opinions in the Gemara that disagree with Tchias HaMaisim. Right? I mean, it's not that the Chiz Mason was something that is so clear that everyone understood and everyone sort of was on board about and et cetera, et cetera. Right? So just that even adds to your point even more, that we don't even know exactly what it is. No, everything that you've said and everything Kim says is absolutely true. But again, the Rambam is not saying that you don't... I mean, the Rambam still says that if you do X, Y, and Z to your parent, you're going to be high of Misa, for instance, right? Clearly. But the issue as far as what defines a person in their Judaism would be belief over deed. Jeff, you want to...
Yeah, you can't always control what you believe in. And you might think you believe in something, but, you know, what's going to... You know, what's the proof of what you believe in or don't believe in? Now, some people have a mood about, you know... Oh, I believe in this, but maybe they're fooling themselves even. So
right.
It just seems like such a difficult thing to pinpoint and to sure. Handle on.
We've been learning, you know, Yudi and I and others have been learning with Jeff for long enough, Shabbos morning, to know that when Jeff asks a question, it's always dead on. That's actually an excellent point, right? I mean, you know, how is a person even sort of held responsible? And this is something I want to sort of pick up on even now. You know, responsible for beliefs or feelings. Can a person always control, you know, what they believe in, what they don't believe in? And that's actually a question that was posed by many, many of the Mefarshim and the Rambam. How is a whole person responsible for belief? Why is that something that's sort of even in a person's control to be punished or not punished for? And again, that's a complicated question and a good question. Maybe something that we'll address like another time. Yuri, and then you got the Kim?
It's just interesting that I just noticed that there's nothing in the Yugim Malikrim about Olam Haba. It only talks about Tchias HaMaisim.
Right.
Which is fascinating. And then if you look in the both in the Mishnah and the Rambam Parak, it both talk about Olam Haba. But that I would think is such a fundamental concept that's not even part of the Yugim Malikrim.
As far as Olam Haba.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the part of Olam Haba is in the Rambam leading up to Yugim Malikrim. You know, like that Olam Haba is given to these 13 people. I mean, these 13 principles are the caveat, the condition for Olam Haba. So it is stated, but it's stated sort of as like this is sort of what a person will get, you know, by following these 13 principles. Kim, you want to?
I was just wondering, because you were saying if somebody, you know, in his time was very well educated, how many of the Jews actually were well educated then? I mean, weren't the majority of Jews not well educated? They just were.
Sure.
And they were hardworking. And
right.
So they, you know, would not have had the opportunity to even come across his idea.
Well, that's true. But even the average simple Jew, unlike today, was much more aware of philosophy and these issues. This is what people were talking about. This is what people were debating about. You know, there's sort of like, and a lot of what he wrote in his time was because the average person on the street were confused or influenced. But this was like, philosophy was sort of like the entertainment. There was no sports. There was no anything. Philosophy was the sort of people discussed, and therefore people were very, very much aware of these things. Much, much more so now than Mickey and Debbie, then we're going to move on. But yeah.
That's why he was so strong about writing the 13th.
Right, exactly.
The Christians were coming in,
right,
pushing their religion on the Jews and everybody else, and he felt that the only way you can stay as a Jew is to keep these 13 principles.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, you would get lost into the Christian
world. Yeah, totally.
And then they tried to kill him, and he had to run away from
something. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's the Ramban, but the same story, same basic idea.
Sorry, just in speaking about today, and that even as you pointed out in the very beginning, that our own children even aren't really taught about as much about
sure.
about faith and belief. It's more about what to do. So, and people who are, you know, around the world that are Jews that aren't affiliated, don't have education, they also don't know what to believe. Doesn't mean we, not only we discard them, but just in terms of like, you know, what happens.
Sure. Listen, obviously, Debbie, what you're pointing out, and you're always wise with these things, is the Rambam, to some degree, is something that exists in sort of an ivory tower of discussion of philosophy. It has no bearing on the way that we're going to run a shul and a school and a neighborhood and how we deal with our kids. The reality is that people either don't know, or they have doubts, or they have objections, and the response is never going to be, oh, you know, you're out. And, you know, you're off the team because of... So the Rambam's are existing in the world that he's living in, and it's definitely worth talking about, discussing. It doesn't necessarily mean that necessarily plays a role in sort of the way we're going to interact with people, because they're doubtful. And we're even going to see at the end, when we finish up, we're going to see sort of a very beautiful letter by Rav Kook that discusses a lot of that, exactly that same issue. Okay? So let's just move on. Again, this thing, which is obviously a fascinating topic, but I just wanted to sort of maybe wrap up in the next 10-15 minutes. Let me show you Ak de Kach, you know, how far the Rambam sort of goes in this. I think it's something that even... that Kim may have alluded to. I just wanted to just interrupt in the middle. You know, I'm so appreciative as people come together. I know it says before, people really engage, and all of your comments are dead on, and so many issues of discussion. So thank you very, very much. Let's mention a Rambam that at least in Shul, we've mentioned many times before, in various shiurim, but you'll see how far this issue or the strength of the Rambam's position goes. Take a look at the bottom on page number 3, underneath that comment by J. David Bleich. So Chamisha, this is the Rambam writing in the Mishnah Torah, in the Laws of Tshuva, Perek Gimel Halacha Zayin. Chamisha heim nikroi minim. There are 5 people that are called a min. Ha'omer she'ein sham eloka. There's no God. Ve'ein lo'ola manhig. There's no one controlling the world. Ha'omer, excuse me, the person who says, she'yesh sham manhig. There is someone who runs the world. Avahim shnayim oyoser. There's 2 gods. There's 3 gods. And lastly, ha'omer she'yesh sham ribon echad. There's 1 God, right? Ha'shehu guf ubalt muna. Right? He has a body. What's about Muna? He has some type of like image. Now the Rambam, by the way, is writing this not only for Christians, but again, this is sort of the beginning. Anybody know sort of what movement was beginning in Judaism around the time of the Rambam? Anybody know? Can we say? Sort of like a lot of like the mystical movements, right? The Zohar is written a little bit afterwards. A lot of the sort of the mystical ideas of the Sviros sort of came into creation around then. And some of the early mystics actually sort of believed, we'll see in arriving in a second, that the mystical conception was that God manifests himself in the world in many, many different ways, and maybe even like in a physical type of way. So the Rambam sort of has it right. Anybody that believes like that God has a body, has a guf, that person is a min, that person is not of Olam Haba. So take a look at this arriving. This arriving is one of probably the least PC, politically correct, most like strongest statements you ever see by Rishon. So the Rambam says, the Rambam lived a little bit after the Rambam in Provence, the south of France. The Rambam often disagreed with the Rambam. So if you see the top lines in the non-Rashi script, right? So Aleph is, anybody know what that stands for? So Amar Avraham, that's the Rambam. The Lama Kra Lezeh Min. Why would you call a person that believes that God has a body a min, a non-believer? Okay? The Kama Gedolim V'Tovim Mimenu. There were people that were far greater and far better than the Rambam. So Hochu Bezeh HaMachshava. They believed that God did have a body. But this is some, what would you call this? What would you, you know, I say some nerd, not some nerd, but people far greater than the Rambam, I don't know who those people are, believed that God did have a body, in fact, right? Lefi Masha'ra'u b'mikra'os, based on, what does it mean? Lefi Masha'ra'u b'mikra'os? Based on what they saw in the Pesukim. A hand of God, and this of God, and the anger of God. V'yosemi Masha'ra'u b'divrei ha'agados, ha'mishabshos es ha'deos. And even more so, based on many of the agadatas, that confuse them. So they have a confused idea about God, that God has a body. So how could the Rambam now go ahead and call that person a min, a non-believer, and say that person does not have a share in the world to come? Does anybody want to give me like a synopsis? How would you explain this machlokas between the Rambam and the Rambam?
I don't think I would disagree.
Okay, good.
He's just saying that it's unfair for the Rambam.
The Raiv essentially says, I don't disagree with you, the Rambam. I agree that God does not have a body. But there are many people who have a mistaken conception about God. So why are you going to say that those people don't have a share in the world to come? Now, what does the Rambam seem to say? What does the Rambam seem to say? If that's what the Raiv had said, what does the Rambam seem to say? That even if you have a mistaken conception about God, even if you mistakenly believe that God does have a body, God does have a goof, even though it's a mistake, it's an onus, it's not your fault, you made a mistake looking at the psukim, the Rambam would still say that person does not have a share in the world to come. Okay? Now, Brian?
Was the Rambam involved in defending Judaism against Islam? Islam was very fundamentalist about these things.
Right.
And if they viewed the Jew as not pure
right.
in their belief, in their way of dealing, there would be bad repercussions for the Jews in the Islamic
right,
world.
Right, that is true. Yeah.
But if they at least understood that we believed the things that they believe is required,
right.
then we would have a better relationship with them.
Is that true? That is true. But I don't think that was the Rambam's concern.
This is the debate
yeah.
about the
corporate. Yeah, exactly. But I just want to stress this point again. What the Rambam clearly is saying is that even if, let's say, Debbie, go back to what you said, you were mistaken, you were confused, you didn't know better, you thought the X, you didn't realize. So the Rambam would still say that person does not have a share in the world to come. Now who speaks about this explicitly? Take a quick look at the top source, number 4. This comes from Rav Chanan Wasserman, okay? A very famous Yiddish expression. Shalom, we're going to need your help because you know how good my Yiddish is. So that's a Rambam, the Hamamin Hagishamahu Min. Anybody that believes in God's physicality, as what David just said, that person's a non-believer. The Haravid Kosov Shigadolu Mitovim Tobazeh. Many people greater than the Rambam were confused by this. Bibnei Ha'agodos, because of the various stories and legends and agaritas. Hamishab Shos Adeos, that confuse a person's thoughts. Vishamati B'Shem Moreno Harav Agrach Halevi, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the grandfather of Rav Soloveitchik, Mebrisk, Bedasa Rambam, Ki Bekvira Lo Shaykh Shogeg. When it comes to being a kofer, not having proper beliefs, you can't say you're a shogeg. I didn't know. I never learned. I made a mistake. I have doubts. You can't do it. Why? Tomikom Makom Eino Mamin. Because either way, no matter what, you don't believe. V'yevshar liyos b'chlal Yisrael below amunam. Either way, you don't have proper faith. V'omer mishmo b'zehalashon. Shalom, this is where we need you. Darvas in novich apikoris. Ein oich apikoris. A person who's a nevach apikorisis is still an apikorisis. Now, this sounds very against everything we're taught in Judaism. If you didn't know, and you were confused, you didn't have great belief, so you're going to sort of be off the team because of that? Like, how do we even understand this concept? It's one thing if you get up, you stand up by the rabbi's drasha. The rabbi's drasha is going on too long, you want to entertain the crowd, you stand on the bima, you say, I've gone through everything before, there's no God in the world, everyone drive home back to your houses. Okay, so that person we understand a little bit. But the guy who's confused, he doesn't know. So the way that Rabbi Bleich actually put it in his book, he said, I apologize for my, I know the hour is getting late, we'll be finished in a few minutes. He said, I apologize for my crude analogy, but it's a little bit about a kid who's not great at math. And he has all the reasons not to be great at math. He's not a great math student, he's not, but either way, of course Rabbi Bleich may not have known the state of the public schools in this country, you can't move that kid from 6th grade to 7th grade, even though it might not necessarily be his fault, right? To gain admission into the next stage of life, it requires having certain skills, certain knowledge, certain abilities. So even though it may not be your fault, Olam Haba is not some type of like magical place. Olam Haba, according to the Rambam, is a place where intellectually you connect to God, intellectually you understand God, there's the pure connection intellectually between man and God. And if you have confused ideas, or you don't believe, even though it's not your fault, so Olam Haba is not necessarily an option for that person. So Ad Kedei Kach, the Rambam is so strong that even if there is confusion about that point or about belief, so the Rambam still says that's the case. Now, just many people disagree with the Rambam. I'm not going to read through these two sources, but the Sefer Yikarim, which is Yosef Albo, he says it's not true. He says if you're confused and you don't know, you can't be held responsible for that. The Radvaz,
who was a 17th century Acharon who lived in Egypt, also said the same as well. And lastly, let's read through. It's a little bit complicated, but let's read through, sort of getting to what, I guess, Debbie said and Kim said, the way that we would feel nowadays. And often the way we feel towards our fellow Jews nowadays are communicated by Rav Kook. You know, people know that I probably have an unhealthy obsession with Rav Kook. I just decorated my office. I put up a lot of pictures there. None of the family, but there's a big picture of Rav Kook on the wall, which of course my kids want to know where they are. But again, and Rav Kook, you know, much of the great love that I have for him, and I'm sure many of you and many people, is really sort of reflected even in this paragraph. Okay, so let's read through it together. Know that, as far as the halacha is concerned, and again, it's a little bit complicated, it's absolutely forbidden and a festering sore for one even to cast a doubt concerning the truth of the content of our perfect faith. You can't do it. It's a festering sore. And Rav Kook's very beautiful language. Of course, Rav Kook wrote in Hebrew. The Hebrew is far more beautiful, but somewhat unintelligible. So, however, we do not find our sages deeming such individuals heretics. Meaning what? What did he just say? If what? If you have a doubt, right? And in fact, by the way, Rav Nachman of Breslov said in a beautiful letter, Rav Nachman of Breslov was also another big Olev Yisrael, he says, it's a good thing for a person to have doubts. He says, how can a person have 100% faith in God that would almost diminish God, right? I have 100% faith in Brian Fox sitting in front of me. No offense, Brian, you're just, you know, a stom guy, a great guy, but here you are. For a person to say that I never doubt, that would almost diminish the greatness of God, and therefore to have doubts of Nachman of Breslov, not only is there nothing wrong, but that shows that a person is thinking and grappling, and Rav Kook probably believes the same as well. Okay, so again, so Rav Kook already is taking a deviation from the path of the Rambam. Anybody want to comment, by the way, on that statement I just made? That Rav Kook is deviating from the path of the Rambam? The Rambam lived in 1163. Anybody know when Rav Kook died? 1935, right? So Rav Kook is coming about 800 years after the Rambam. Normally we say that if you live 800 years after a Rishon, who are you to disagree with the Rishon about an issue of halacha? But when it comes to Jewish faith and Jewish philosophy, we have much more blurred lines. Like you can sort of, someone now can come ahead and write something that might disagree with the Rambam or the Ramban, but it comes to issues of faith and philosophy in ways that we normally would not do that. Okay, so Cook says, continuing in line 4, only one who definitely denies, I mean, he's definite, that is, who decides that the very opposite of our faith is true, is included in this category. A categorical denial cannot possibly be found in Israel, except in one who is completely wicked and an intentional liar, for the greatest wickedness can only sow doubt in the minds of the weak. One who is brazen enough to say that he is a complete denier is a certainly wicked. If you can say, I'm completely denying that person, you're right, says Rav Kook is a Rasha. And he cannot claim that he has no control over his thoughts. If the heresy in our generation was honest, you hear this? It would always be in a position of doubt. And its doubts could be easily clarified. However, it intentionally falsifies and claims certainty in its denial, even though those weakest in faith can only arrive at a level of doubt. What's Rav Kook saying?
Some people can only do that.
He says, in our generation, there's no such thing as a person who's a real heretic. A person who can get up, who's not influenced by this or influenced by that, who knows everything, and say, I'm a heretic. If a person could say that to Rav Kook, if you could find that person would be a Rasha. But that person doesn't exist. Right? It's a typical Rav Kook. Everyone else nowadays is in a realm of doubt. And seeing that a person who has doubts about God's existence is not a heretic, so there are no heretics that are of Kook in the world, and therefore, Debbie, so going back to your point, we are free to love and embrace everyone, because essentially the idea of the Rambam might not be so normative nowadays. Now, I hope that in some way, at the very least, this is something to think about, whether or not the Rambam is totally, totally, at least in that statement, the Yud Gimel Karim or the Yud Gimel Karim, but that statement perhaps something which is not normative nowadays, but something for all of us to really sort of be thinking about issues of faith. What we believe in, how to internalize that faith, how to clarify that faith, how to make it a real piece of who we are, not to have a disconnect between putting on tefillin in the morning and our belief in God as sort of being creations in the first place, not to have a disconnect in our actions and our belief, not to diminish, so we can get to your point, the role of belief and the role of creed in Judaism, and hopefully a little bit sort of thinking about the Rambam and the Ani Mamins allows us to do that. Just a chazer very quickly, we mentioned the Rambam wrote the 13 principles of faith, and its introduction to Perek Achelek. That was then taken, and it was made into Yigdal in the 14th century, Ani Mamin in the 16th century. We're going to be, actually, before we conclude, I just want to show you just two last very quick Ma'ariv Makomos. The Rambam did this, because the Rambam very much believed that part of halacha, maybe even more important than actual actions, is belief. The Rambam also did this as a way of rejecting many of the ideologies of the time, that sort of rejecting thoughts from outside. And he also did this for people themselves who may not have a clear idea of faith, to strengthen their faith as well. But we saw many of the controversial ideas in the Rambam. Just to give you a sense, a little bit of the controversy, even about Yigdal and Ani Mamin, and we'll conclude with this. I skipped this before, but go back to now, on page 2. The Chofetz Chaim writes in one of his letters, the Chofetz Chaim, which is sort of like an interesting point. The Chofetz Chaim, of course, was Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan HaKohen. He wrote the book Chofetz Chaim. That book was so popular that he became known as the Chofetz Chaim. You know, sort of more people known by that name than by his real name. But he says this very, very quickly, Ona Marti La'orer Bezeh. So Avas Yisrael al Inyan Niskal. I wanted to sort of mention this one point. Fumi Adua b'Minag Hinhigu Hakadmonim Lomar B'Chol Yom Achar Hatfila. As a Yud Gimel Ikare Hadas, right? V'Hem Yud Gimel Ani Mamin. And he says this is an old custom to say this every single day. I wonder if people hear if they say it. People are sort of rushing out the door. But he says it's very, very important. The Chazon Ish says that he would say it twice a day. The real significance, the real importance of saying the Ani Mamins every single day. Who disagreed with that? Anybody know people disagreed? Anybody know why they disagreed? Okay. Anybody? Shalom, I think you mentioned this before. So some people, they disagree. The Mahariel. Anybody can sort of think about this on a philosophical level, why they would disagree? Because it's giving more sort of significance to certain pieces of the Torah versus other pieces of the Torah. Everything's important. Every idea is important. How can we just sort of crystallize into 13 principles of faith? Therefore, some people said, do not say Yigdal, do not say Ani Mamin, because it's telling you these are really the important things, but not other things. The Arizal, who of course was one of the heads of the Kabbalistic trait, he also said, do not, and that's why none of the Kabbalists, do not say Yigdal, do not say Ani Mamin. He had his own very unique Kabbalistic idea. What's that?
Same thing with the Aser HaDibra.
There was also. Exactly right. But there's a sort of a unique Kabbalistic reason. Take a look in source number 4. This is the Nefesh HaRav, which is sort of a biography that Rav Shechter wrote about Rav Salvechik. Take a look at the last 3 lines. V'shamati b'shem Rabbeinu Shalomar Himnon kezeh hakol b'tocha kol ikarei amuna yesh bo mishum chukas akum. To go ahead and to say Yigdal, but this might be the excuse in our shul. Although Yigdal is pretty quiet. The Dona Lam is a whole other story. Okay, that it has chukas akum. It's like following in the ways of the non-believers. How is that? Why would saying the Ani Mamin or Yigdal be like chukas akum? Anybody want to tell me what he says? Kanal. Shekei nohug b'tfila eitzel. What's that? Hakotolim. Who are those people?
Catholic.
The Catholics. Sha'omrim esha. What does it say?
Catechism.
Right. Lachsur b'peh. I'll call ikre munasam. That the reason that the Jews had placed the Ani Mamins in the Siddur, or Yigdal in the Siddur, was because they were imitating the Catholics at the end of their prayer service. I don't know this from first-hand experience. Would sort of recite all the tenets of faith. Therefore, the Rav felt it only came here because of Chukas Akum, and therefore he says that no shul should say the Ani Mamin, no shul should say the Yigdal. This is just like a little bit of a taste of sort of some of the controversy of the Rambam. The Chofetz Chaim, the Chazon Ish, says it's so important, you have to do it every single day. Other people saying, well, maybe it's not the best idea, maybe there's other issues involved. But even this sort of this like modern day debate gives you a little bit of a sense of how complicated the issues of faith are, which might go back to our original question. It's much easier to teach halacha, it's much easier to teach Gemara Sukkah. You get into issues of faith and how to integrate that and how to really, not convince people, but educate about faith. Clearly it's more complicated, but this is sort of like a little bit of a tip of the iceberg of the issue. Thank you, everyone. Thank you all for staying awake.